You are listening to Frontlines of Struggle, a podcast of the U.S. Human Rights Network, highlighting key organizing campaigns and initiatives throughout the United States and its colonial possessions that are advancing the development of a people-centered human rights movement. Your host for this podcast is Kali Okuno, the acting co-director of the U.S. Human Rights Network. Today we have with us Clarence Thomas. Clarence is the co-chair of the executive board of the Million Worker March, a mobilization effort of unions, labor councils, social and community organizations, friends and neighbors working for social change and to forge a social, economic, and political movement for working people. Clarence is also executive board member of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, the ILWU Local 10, over San Francisco and Oakland. Clarence is also an active member in Occupy Oakland, and he's joining us from Oakland today. Clarence, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just wanted to clarify that I'm a national co-chair of the Million Worker March movement, and as you stated, the member of the executive board of ILWU Local 10, and my remarks today will be as a rank and filer and as a member of the Million Worker March movement, so that I will not be speaking as an official spokesperson for Local 10.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification, Claire. Before getting into our main subject, which are the call for a general strike that Occupy Oakland put out on November 2nd, and then the follow-up to that, which was a coast-wide strike on the West Coast on December 12th, I want you to just give a little background to our listening audience of what the longshore workers do. What does the ILWU do, and what is the kind of strategic importance of the longshore industry?
Okay, I think that that's a very good place to start. The first thing is that longshoremen are responsible for the loading and unloading of maritime cargo. That's any kind of cargo that is on a commercial vessel. You know, it could be containers, it could be things like grain, cement, it could be automobiles. And longshore workers are some of the most critical workers to the not only the global economy, but to the local economy, because the jobs that we do are responsible for many, many other jobs. And I think that the importance of longshore jobs in particular are pretty much self-explanatory, because when you look at how commodities are brought to the public, they have to first be unloaded off of a vessel and then made available to people. So in that regard, we are very important. There are 29 ports on the West Coast, and the International Longshore and Warehouse Union provides the labor force for that. The largest container port in the United States of America, located in Los Angeles, Long Beach, and that is in terms of volume of containers that are moved here in the United States. The Port of Oakland, which is where the majority of our work is here in the Bay Area, is very strategic because it's one of the closest destinations from Asia to the West Coast. The Port of Oakland is the fifth largest in terms of container volume in the United States. And I think that in terms of its importance to the black community, that some of the earliest organized black workers were longshore workers. And the reason for that is because the importance of those vessels being unloaded, you know, during the formative years of shipping, the work was highly, highly dangerous, and it required you know, people who were strong, had a strong back, but also skill, you know, to be able to take everything from bales of cotton to various other commodities that are transported. And so that is pretty much what we are about. I think we have a very unique and, I would say, illustrative history in that our union was conceived and struggle dating back to 1934. One of the most important labor struggles was waged on the West Coast when workers who were known pretty much as roustabouts and not given very much respect waged a heroic and courageous struggle against the shipping owners. And the reason for that struggle was to establish a hiring hall to end the shape-up, which was a system by which company bosses used to pick and choose what longshoremen could go to work for the day, and that usually involved some kind of nepotism, cronyism, favoritism, or kickbacks, and the right to have collective bargaining. That struggle went on for some 4 months, and it culminated in a general strike paralyzing the city of San Francisco for 4 days. Later, we went to arbitration and were able to win the major objectives of that of that strike. So we have a long tradition of social justice activism dating back to the 1930s when longshore workers in San Francisco refused to cross a community picket line that was protesting scrap iron being sent to Japan prior to World War II, or community picket lines in 1977 protesting the apartheid of South Africa. One of the high points of our union's history was the refusal of ILWU Local 10 members to unload cargo from South Africa in 1984 for a total of 11 days, raising the level of resistance and consciousness with respect to the whole question of fighting the apartheid system. That led to the divestment movement where companies were forced to divest from any investment in South Africa, and also boycotting of South African products. And later there was the issue of sanctions against South Africa that took place in United States Congress. The ILWU played a very important role in that. And when Nelson Mandela came to the Bay Area to do his international tour upon being released from prison, he acknowledged the ILWU because we like to consider ourselves as workers with a conscience. So that's a little bit about what we've done, but it doesn't stop there in 1984.
Mm-hmm.
In 1999, we shut down the entire coast demanding a new trial for Mumia Abu-Jamal. We protested the WTL, the World Trade Organization, in 1999 also. In 2008, on International Workers' Day, our union shut down all 29 ports, not for increase in wages or benefits or working conditions, but to oppose the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as demanding that the troops be brought home immediately. So this kind of history is a living history, and it's a testament to those longshoremen who came before us.
Thank you for that breakdown, Clarence. Now, bringing it up to speed, you know, the ports have been a target on the West Coast of the Occupy movement. Which I think kind of reflects a critical advance in some of the thinking of the social movement that Occupy represents. And on November 2nd, there was a call for a general strike that I know you participated in, and also the Million Worker March participated in. Could you give us just a brief breakdown of,
yes,
you know, how we got to this call for a general strike, which haven't been, you know, one hasn't really been called in the United States for some time.
Right.
How we got to that point, and what was the outcome of that initiative?
Okay. Well, I think that, you know, I had made mention of the fact that in 1934 there was the strike that took place in San Francisco. There had been also one in Oakland in 1946. But the reason for the call of November 2nd was that it was in response to the coordinated military-style attack by 18 police agencies in the Bay Area that attempted to evict the encampment of the Occupy Oakland at what we now call Oscar Grand Plaza. This is where Iraqi veteran Scott Olson, who served two tours of duty in Iraq, was critically wounded by a tear gas canister shot to his head by Oakland police. This call for a general strike was in response to what I just described.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to note that this call was not made by labor, and perhaps rightfully so, because only 12.9% of the overall workforce is unionized in this country today.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, the private sector is just 7.2% of the private sector is unionized. This represents the lowest percentage of unionized workers in the private sector since 1900. So I think it was appropriate that the call was made by the unorganized and not organized labor. While it is true that it would take more than a week, which is what was the amount, the lead time that was actually involved in making this call to organize a general strike. And typically, organized labor would not get the blessings to of labor officialdom to do anything this militant and radical, especially within a week's time. But suffice it to say, because of the public outrage here in the Bay Area, you know, to the paramilitary attack on people who were peacefully assembled in front of City Hall in Oakland, that they turned out in the anywhere from 40,000 to 60,000 people on November 2nd, which ostensibly shut down the city of Oakland for one day. But also what happened was that on the night shift, the fifth largest port in the United States was shut down, where some maybe 30,000 people or more marched to the Port of Oakland, shutting it down for the day, for the evening. And I think that that was probably one of the most powerful manifestations of people power or power of the people in the 21st century. I think that it is different from what we saw in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, we saw unprecedented turnout of the working class and labor at the capital of Wisconsin, which is in Madison, where they had also occupied the state capital. In the case of the Occupy Oakland movement, capital was disrupted.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we need to understand the difference in those two struggles. And because one of the ways in which the working class is able to establish any leverage with capital is from the withholding of our labor. So when we had the action at the port, as well as the action by Oakland city workers at Oakland City Hall, primarily workers from SEIU 1021, which was able to secure from the city manager the ability of its workers not to go to work on the basis of health and safety or to stand in solidarity with the Occupy movement. Workers were allowed, you know, to take various kinds of leave for the day without any kind of repercussions. And I think that that was really remarkable. But it was a very, very historic movement and event, and it really does harken back to the days of the 1930s when trade unionists and workers did such things as took over plants through sit-ins. There were strikes. There was a great deal of worker solidarity and movement throughout the country, and that led to the New Deal. You know, the right for us to have Social Security, the right to have public works projects funded like the Bay Bridge, the Hoover Dam, the Golden Gate Bridge, the Bay Bridge, and things of that nature. This These things were done with public money as a means to putting the American working class back to work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's also important to point out that the idea of shutting down ports is something that takes a page out of the history of the ILWU. And I think that it is remarkable that young people who are a significant portion of the Occupy movement would take the page of that history, but it's very appropriate that they do so. The ILWU has been on the cutting edge of struggles for economic and social justice. I think it is important to point out that many of the young people that are a part of this Occupy Oakland movement are people that worked on the Oscar Grant, Justice for Oscar Grant campaign. And I know that last October 2010, Local 10 shut down five Bay Area ports, calling for justice for Oscar Grant and jail for killer cops. We wanted to make sure that Johannes Mezely received appropriate justice. He did not, although he did serve nearly 2 years for killing Oscar Grant in the back while he was handcuffed. But I think that one of the important things to remember about that particular struggle is that this was the first time that labor had ever come out and not only taken a position on the matter of police brutality, which in the black community, which is a working class issue, but to actually not go to work for 8 hours and shutting down five Bay Area ports was unprecedented. So I think that this history of the ILWU and its connection with the Occupy movement is very important, because labor at this particular juncture is at a crossroads. And so in the past, labor has been the primary moving force between capital and the working class that has been responsible for equality in terms of equity and in terms of capital being demanded to provide living wages and benefits and pensions and so forth and so on. Labor has been critical in that struggle. But the question remains today is, will labor continue to be that kind of force, or will it be some entity outside of organized labor, namely the Occupy movement? And I think that that's a critical question that will be answered very, very soon. I know that labor is recognizing the fact that the Occupy movement has re-energized labor, and that's very important. But at the same time, too, we also understand this, that there is a major disconnect in many unions between the respective leaderships of, or labor officialdom and the rank and file. And what I mean by that is this, is that the recent action taken by the Occupy movement on December 12th, where all poets on the West Coast were the subject of either shutdowns or public demonstrations opposing Capitol. The ILWU did not have an opportunity to vote on that matter, but there were members of the ILWU rank and file that were a part of the various Occupy movements up and down the coast in Portland, Oregon, in Seattle, in Oakland, and in various other ports up and down the coast. So while the international leadership of the ILWU did not support it, endorse it in any way, shape, or fashion, there were ILWU rank and filers who did. And so there was some confusion as to what the demeanor was going to be of the longshore workers when they were going to be confronted with these community picket lines up and down the coast. Well, I'm happy to announce that on that day, not one IOWU member crossed the community picket line, and that has long been our history and tradition. It is important for people to understand this, that labor has to understand its relevance and its importance to the class. When I say the class, I'm talking about the working class. And so if labor doesn't want to be perceived as a special interest group, marginalized and isolated away from the working class, then it is going to have to be able to appeal to the working class and to do things that will gain the respect and the affection of the class in order for us to confront the challenges of the 21st century. I would just like to say that on December the 12th, that there were major demonstrations at various ports up and down the coast, and I guess you could say that it was shut down Wall Street on the waterfront. There were Occupy protests from one kind or another in various ports, where thousands of protesters descended upon ports in San Diego, L.A. Long Beach, Oakland, Seattle, Tacoma, Longview, Bellingham, Washington, Portland, Anchorage, Alaska, Vancouver, Washington, as well as Vancouver, Canada, and Hilo, Hawaii, and the ports in Honolulu. And I know that there were at least four port closures at the Port of Oakland, San Francisco, Seattle, and another port. And it's also important to note that in Bellingham, Washington, demonstrators actually laid down on rail tracks to prevent rail cars from going to a nearby port. This was an unprecedented action. It was highly successful, and we think that for those who have raised the question as to what is it that the Occupy movement stands for and what it's all about, I think that action such as shutting down Capitol for one day speaks directly to its class content and its relevance to the working class and labor. One of the major things that is about to take shape next is that there is a grain vessel that is expected to come to Longview, Washington. Longview, Washington is a place where there is a major grain operation. Local 21 of the IOWU is established there. Longshoremen have been operating the grain facility since 1934. And in this case, a company called EGT, Export Grain Terminals, they're seeking to break the coastwide grain contract. This is a situation that is probably the most challenging to our jurisdiction since 1934. We are going to be mobilizing a caravan of buses taking IOWU members as well as Occupy movement activists and other community organizations to Longview, Washington when that vessel comes in. We are anticipating that it will come in sometimes in January. I believe that there has to be labor community solidarity in order to take on these Wall Street giants. Labor is in no position to fight these battles alone. And as I made reference to in prior occasions, that with only 7.2% of the private sector being unionized, it is absolutely essential that there be these coalitions in order for labor and the working class to win these struggles. We hope to bring 10,000 people to Longview for the purpose of letting EGT and all other Wall Street firms on the waterfront know that when they challenge the ILWU's jurisdiction, not only will they have to deal with the ILWU, but they're going to also have to deal with the entire working class.
Well, thank you for breaking it down for us, Clarice. That was very informative. I think it's something definitely our listening audience could learn a lot from to assimilate some of the lessons into their work. One last thing, if folks want to support this initiative, you know, that you're organizing in Longview and some of the other things that the Million Worker March or the Occupy movement is engaged in, how can they reach you specifically?
Okay. For more information about the EGT struggle in Longview, you can email committee to defend ILWU at yahoo.com. I will repeat that again. Committee to defend ILWU at yahoo.com. And that's the best way to get information about the information concerning how to join the caravan. In terms of the Million Worker March, you can go to www.millionworkermarch.org and find out more about the Million Worker March movement. We would also hope that anyone out there who is interested in finding out more about the ILWU, that they could, you know, visit the ILWU website, www.ilwu.org. That's the very important lessons of labor history that all people should know about. I want to thank you for having me on the program today, Khalid.
Thank you.